Lime.
Yeah. Let's do it again, baby. Hello.
Changing my lifestyle.
Wow.
I'm 4 or 5 women every day of my life.
Welcome to the Comedians of Wrestling podcast, a podcast where comedians are dissecting wrestling to an unhealthy degree. I am your host, the host with the most viral stand-up about professional wrestling, Mark, a.k.a. Dunskia Blackamora, a.k.a. Donnie Capri. From the time I went to Italy, a.k.a. Donnie Wrestling. Donnie Wrestling. Coming at you like Cleopatra, baby. Gubba.
Gubba, gubba, wee. Yeah, gubba, yeah. Gubba, gay. Gubba, gubba,
this
gubba,
girl, gubba, she's mine. And, she's fine. What up, Jabroniacs? We are back in action for your satisfaction with all of our spicy coming at you wrestling reactions. We got weather on the 2. We got all the special events going on in the Dallas, Texas area this weekend. Shawn Michaels coming through it. You got a KXLM COW. All right, what up? Thanks. We're back at the podcast here. Let me just introduce her to my side of the Zoom tiles. A real thorn in my side, the First Lady, Erin Finnerty, in the house.
What up?
What up? What up? What up? And also not in the house, Nasty Newman, who was here and was having some serious internet connections in this crazy jabron zone of the quarantine.
Next up, the jabron zone.
We are slaves to the technology.
It's very annoying.
Yes.
And full disclosure, the three of us don't live that far from one another, but right. We are still subject to technology to record this podcast.
Lockdown.
Yeah.
So we're re-recording about the first 15 minutes of this podcast. So we're going to be recapping what we said to deal with tech issues. But by it, listen, that's why we need your support. And the best way to do that is patreon.com/comedianswrestling. If you're listening to this podcast every week, and I know a lot of you are, give us a couple bucks over on the Patreon, and we are not asking for handouts. We have bonus content every week, every Monday night/Tuesday morning. We have the Cal Movie Club episodes where you're sitting around during this quarantine. You got nothing to do. You're like, what should I watch? We'll tell you what to watch. We're watching movies with professional wrestlers in them, and then we're talking about it. Erin, what movie starring a pro wrestler did we watch this week that they can listen to now, the patrons? And what episode can they expect for next week?
Okay, well, this week we watched the 1995 cyber thriller, Virtuosity.
Classic.
It's a classic, easy classic.
We don't watch anything that's not a classic. Everything's a classic.
Literally every movie that we watch is it's a classic. And stars Denzel Washington, Russell Crowe, Michael Buffer, and Ken Shamrock. And you can check out the episode and check out the movie on Showtime. It is pretty good, in my opinion.
This movie had the incredible Russell Crowe performance.
Yeah.
This movie is dated as hell. It's like an internet movie before the internet exists. It's like pre Matrix, wannabe Matrix movie.
Yeah.
But you can check that out. And then what will we be watching for next week? What should the people get ahead of?
You guys have to check out a movie called Knockout, starring Stone Cold Steve Austin, now available on Amazon Prime and the official Cal Movie Club streaming platform, Tubi. And special announcement, we'll be releasing a little sample of the Cal Movie Club on the main feed with this episode. We are putting out the My Spy episode that we did a couple weeks ago. And if you haven't seen My Spy, you can check it out on Amazon Prime and give our Cow Movie Club episode a listen for free.
Dope. You can also get our AEW NXT episodes, bonus episodes on Patreon that I do with Nick Tulo every Friday morning, where we answer your questions about AEW NXT, and we mark out even harder than this pod. Also, you guys can check out, one more plug, you can listen to Aaron and I on the Dan Black Attack podcast, bringing you the regular guy news, the least pretentious name in news today. Started a podcast on my other podcast that's non-wrestling related, because I am a three-dimensional individual, okay? We're talking about all the questions I have as a news junkie in the news, about stuff that they just assume you understand, and not being pretentious, just being like, what does this mean? What does that mean? Right? And this week, we discussed the firing of Nick Cannon for anti-Semitic comments. And we go down a whole wormhole about why he was fired, where these theories come from. And there's some positivity to the whole thing, too. It's not just all about hate. There's some really great people who stand up to these kind of bad words, yeah. So give it a listen over there in the Regular Guy News.
Check out Regular Guy News
on the Dan Black Attack podcast. That's right. Anyway, okay, let's get into all the wrestling spiciness that we already got into. Okay, are you ready? Because I mean, we had a pay per view, we had a Raw, we had SmackDown, we had NXT, AEW. Where are we going to begin?
I've Men in Blacked the previous recording of this segment.
Oh, so you have?
I don't remember any of it. Yeah.
Did we talk about that last week, Men in Blacking?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. Tulo was saying, yeah, because I was trying to Men in Black. What did I want to Men in Black? Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad.
We call it Men in Blacking. We're using as a verb to mean it's that wand that makes you forget seeing an alien.
Yeah, right? I wanted to Men in Black the experience of seeing the movie Patriots Day for the first time.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to just do Breaking Bad. And then you thought that was a better choice because it's a lot more content.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we're going to start so outside the ring. Considering all the wrestling that was on this week, where I'm going to start is on Enzo Amore.
Swerve.
So Enzo Amore put out this video that I happened to stumble across. I don't really know why, where he has the Cruiserweight Championship, because when he got fired from WWE, he still had the strap, the purple Cruiserweight title, and he just never gave it back. Yeah.
Did they just replace it?
Now it's black, I think, and it's on NXT. So, you know.
Right.
So I mean, they have multiple versions of every title, so he just happened to have one with him, you know?
Yes, yes. And he still claims he's the champ.
Yeah, so he's calling himself the realest champ in the room. And I thought the way he said soft was so fucking stupid and funny. And by the way, I'm not endorsing Enzo. I don't think he should be a draw for you. If you happen to see a show that he's booked on, that's fine, but don't just go to see him because he got his bad character.
He's a jabron.
Yeah.
We all threw away our headbands with the fake hair on them, our leopard print.
We stopped doing that dance. I was doing that when I wake up immediately. the duck dance.
Going to go get your toothbrush to brush your teeth.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would do that just to start my day. A little stutter walk. You know what I mean? And then I'd put on my slippers and then just do it immediately.
One time I ran into Dan at Albertsons and he was actually going up and down the aisles of the supermarket doing the Enzo dance.
Yeah,
it's really strange to see in the wild.
I was going up the aisles and I would do how Enzo walks down the ramp. I'd be like, my name is Enzo Amore and I am a certified G and a bona fide stud. And so you can't teach that. Mm-hmm. And this right here, this is Kellogg's Frosted Flakes. All right, folks. I couldn't even think of a cereal. Do you know that?
Kellogg's Frosted Flakes.
Do you know how fucking jacked and healthy I am? I could barely muster up the specifics of a cereal that was relatable to the folks. This is the kind of elitist behavior.
Cereal aisle in many moons.
Lucky Charms, that's a specific I can barely muster, okay? Because if you're eating Lucky Charms and Cinnamon Toast Crunch, I'm leaving you in my dust. You've been Men in Blacked by me, okay?
Can I tell you, I made Rice Krispie treats using Lucky Charms during this quarantine period, and it was lit.
I mean, yeah, there's nothing not to like about that.
Yeah, it was fire.
Okay, so here is Enzo, the new way he says soft, okay?
Shit, it's S-A-W-W-E. F-T. Soft!
Let's hear it again.
Yeah.
F-T. S-A-W-W-E. F-T. Soft!
Soft! Soft! Okay, so here's the moment that is a bummer we lost on the other podcast, which is that I am obsessed with how Enzo says this. Soft!
Okay, Dan has sent this clip around multiple times in the last 24 to 48 hours. So he's seen it many times.
Yeah.
But on our previous recording of this episode, Newman asked the question before he got cut off. Oh, because WWE is soft. And that was a moment of realization where Dan realized that Enzo inserted another W and another E for WWE.
I just thought he added a W and an E to make it sound weird.
It sound different so he could continue to use this maybe licensed catchphrase. He didn't even pick up on it, and it was very funny.
And now explaining a funny moment back is always very funny.
Yes. Shame.
I did not pick up on that. It's similar to the time where I realized 10 years after the show was already canceled or retired or finaled, King of Queens, I realized it dawned on me. Oh, that character probably lives in Queens, and he's the King of Queens. And
you
I never watched. Okay. I'd never seen the show, so I didn't realize he lived in Queens. But I was like, "Whoa, what a good title! The King of he's the King of Queens."
Well, right? if you would have even seen like the first 30 seconds of an episode, you would have known that because it's like in the theme song. The Queensboro Bridge.
Soif.
Anyway,
what
a funny way to get around the copyright of soft or whatever. He says soft. You know, Enzo, the thing about Enzo is he has a talent for wrestling, not in ring wrestling by any means, but he is definitely a draw. He's also sort of, he looks like crap if you look at his picture and stuff. Like, I
look at like the Real Ones account from time to time if it comes up, but I haven't checked in on him besides that video in a minute.
Yeah. Well, he's S-A-W-W-E-F-T. Okay. Anyway, moving on. So we're going to discuss again the swamp fight from Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed Extreme Rules pay-per-view. It wasn't an amazing pay-per-view. I thought there were some sloppy moments with it, but I still had a fun time with it. I definitely walked away from this pay-per-view being a little bit like, it was a little bit like, I feel a little deflated with that every WWE thing is in that performance center, you know?
Yeah.
Like every show feels the same.
It feels the same. And Nick Tulo pointed this out that they didn't do any, they called it the horror show at Extreme Rules, but the set, the performance center, they did literally nothing to differentiate it from any of the weekly shows that we see on TV. It was a huge missed opportunity that could have made it like a little cooler and like more palatable to watch, but it was still fun.
It's just this thing. It's like, I understand that they have like they had four shows last week if you count NXT and the pay-per-view, you know? They have, I mean, that's like 10 hours of programming all in the same place, so I understand they're kind of stuck. And but man, I don't know. I mean, they're in Florida. There's no fucking rules in Florida. They can't find an outdoor place to do these matches, like rent a high school football stadium, right? And just have like the bleachers and
yeah,
do
the
something
governor
fun
would
outside or cool, right?
Yeah. I'm sure the governor would give them any type of venue. I think they're just like stuck in their ways with this performance center thing. And, you know, AEW has already capitalized on using like a outdoor arena stadium for a match. So maybe they don't want to feel like, oh, we're copying them. I don't know.
I mean, the AEW show feels very similar to what it would feel like. It's missing the crowd and stuff, but they have their same entrance ramp and it's cropped. They still have pyro. It's not like when they do shots from the ringside and they shoot up, you're not seeing like a fan in and we're talking, these are pay-per-views. Now look, we're in the middle of this crisis. I know some of you are gonna be like, this is unfair. But I'm just saying it's we're talking about a show. The ratings are in the toilet for this stuff. So, you know, it's making – WWE is stuck, and they're not making – they don't seem to be making moves to fix the matches. Now, I do give them credit for the cinematic stuff. The Money in the Bank match was – I didn't love it, but it was an attempt. It was a cool attempt. It was weird. It was weird, and they did like this swamp fight, which we'll talk about. But right now, the way I'm feeling, this is kind of shocking for me, because I'm a huge WWE mark. I was more excited to put on the Impact pay per view than really this pay per view. Almost, you know.
Interesting. Yeah.
Now that's also because we knew a lot of WWE talent were going to go over there, so. So I think that, you know, and I don't know. I don't even watch Impact, really. So, and I didn't finish it yet, but I'm still going to watch that pay-per-view. But, you know, yeah, I don't know. There's definitely a lack of excitement with the stuff going on. And I'm not sure how WWE's going to break out of it. They do have some great shit going on. You have Randy Orton firing on all cylinders. But, and I keep Randy Orton versus Big Show was the main event of Raw, and it was the lowest quarter hour WWE rating ever.
I'm not surprised by that. We were recording the Cow Movie Club during Monday Night Raw, and I leave it on here on mute, but we had finished before that match came on, and I just turned it off. I didn't watch.
Right, and the match was actually pretty good. Like Orton was beating the shit out of Big Show with a chair, and Show kicked out of an RKO. Like, it was actually a good time. But it also made me think about this other element of WWE, which was that I feel like WWE has a reputation for kind of like being very throwaway with their talent or whatever, you know. But honestly, when you're watching Orton Big Show, you're like, these are older guys at this point, you know?
Yeah.
And you see Lashley, and you're like, well, an MVP, and you're like, wow. Like, I was like, oh, maybe they really need to, like, really freshen up the talent pool here, you know?
Right.
And like, maybe that's also a thing where, like, but I don't know. My point is that, like, I like WWE giving these guys long-term jobs, you know?
Sure.
So I hope that's not what it is, but I just had that like, dawned on me, which is that, like, oh, well, why am I watching AEW? It's all fresh. It's all new. But I just do think the real answer to this thing is they just need to get creative for the long haul, like the long show. It's cool. These cinematic matches are awesome. I love them. But every match in that training center – it makes nothing feel like a pay-per-view.
Right. I kind of feel like, you know, the swamp match, for example, I said, like, why can't they do this during the week to, like, make Raw, the 3 hours of Raw, break that up, do something interesting in there?
That's a great point.
It doesn't seem like it's that hard to do. You know, AEW has executed this, like, a few times with the Dark Order, for example. Right. Like, they should be mixing it up, because 3 hours every Monday in the Performance Center is a slog. And if they could do it, like, make it part of the show every week just to make the regular programming more exciting.
Yeah, I think you're nailing it. Like, the whole the AEW, the WWE model right now is not good, because, like, for example, Palm Springs, right, was a huge released movie. It was a big indie movie. It was supposed to be it went to Sundance. There was a bidding war for it. It was like the big movie people wanted to buy, and they're like, this is going to be a big hit movie, even though it was a small budget indie film. And it came out on Hulu. It's just a blip on Hulu menu in this time we live in. So the concept of a pay-per-view is non-existent. right?
Yeah.
And so when you're trying to build up to these pay-per-views, there's a flaw in that, especially if it's another show. Like, if takeovers are just on Wednesday nights also, and Fighter Fest, and what was the other one? Fight for the Fallen, right? And Fight for Your Right to Party, or whatever the next one is.
I love that one.
If that's going to happen, then that's setting this precedent now that, like, actually time doesn't exist. Events don't exist. Every day is not really more special than the last, unfortunately. You know, it's just like we live in – times are – they changed instantly, you know?
Yeah.
And Saturday is non-existent. Saturday is the same as Tuesday.
I don't know what day it is. I sent several emails this morning, Wednesday, saying it was Thursday because I just – I don't know anymore.
Right.
And WWE's product, like – a lot of it hinges on being on tour and being in big venues and being in extra big venues for pay-per-views and stuff. And like you said, that model is suffering right now because they don't have – their backup plan is just doing every single show in the performance center.
Right.
And it's like boring.
Right. So like last – like now every week – Cody is putting the title on the line every – he's opening up every Dynamite. And then Moxley had a title shot last night last Wednesday. So I do think that works where it's like, why doesn't Drew just put it on – like, stop building to these pay-per-views. Now, on top of building to these pay-per-views, we're saying that, like, if it's going to be called the horror show and just still be the performance center, that's setting yourself up for disaster, you know?
Yeah, there was nothing. I was excited that it was the horror show at Extreme Rules because I thought it would be something different. Or
it looked like
box.
Halloween Havoc, like a big pumpkin.
Yeah, that would be dope, like something. And also they had like their social media posts leading up to it. They were really selling this horror show. And when you got there, there was nothing horrific about it. Like there, it was a fit. Failed. It wasn't anything. It was a fun pay-per-view, but the horror show element was a miss.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, WWE's failing to really pivot here. You know, they're just waiting for, you know, to be honest, it's not surprising. They're in Florida. They're in tow with the governor and the administration. And their plan is to, like, just get everything back to normal as soon as possible, right? As opposed to adjusting to the time. Like, it's actually kind of not surprising, you know? It's almost a metaphor in that way. But, like, yeah, these title matches, put them on Raw, put them on SmackDown. Make your shows matter more because, like, this week you had Riddle versus AJ for the IC title, but people weren't that interested in it. Even though that's a killer match, because you know it's not a real pay-per-view style title fight where the actual title could be turned over, you know?
Right.
So start setting that precedent that, like, you know, SmackDowns could have big could feel different. Their model, it's gonna have to change, you know?
If they want the ratings to go back up.
Right. So I think that's what was frustrating about the pay-per-view is that it's too much content to be the same. That's really what it is.
100%. It's
AEW's got the 2 hours a week.
I know.
And it's jam-packed with important shit.
Right. And this
and important,
is just like
I'm putting in quotes, you know.
A bad time to have quarantine happen because in October they ticked up. They added NXT to prime time and added another hour. And it's just so much already. And then now this quarantine thing happens where they're stuck in the performance center. It's just not great.
Right. So anyway, that being said, let's talk about the one part of Extreme Rules that was, I guess, was horror filled, which was the swamp fight. So Aaron, you were big thumbs up for the swamp fight.
Yeah, I had a blast watching it.
Yeah, I'm also thumbs up on the swamp fight. I thought it was a good time. I thought it was really fun. Mm-hmm.
And it's just so refreshing to see one of the cinematic matches
right.
that, like, I mean, Money in the Bank was one that I went into and I was excited, but I was let down because it wasn't good.
Right.
So they don't always deliver, I guess, but this one I thought was cool.
Throughout. Right. I liked it. Like, it was a good time, but I will say, I thought it was very sloppy and one of their worst cinematic matches, okay? Mm-hmm. Meaning, like, I rewatched it, and I think that, like, I said this on the other app, like, immediately, there's something about Fedora Bray in that character that I think he never really figured out. And it shines through here whenever he cuts these promos, and I'm like, I don't follow this character. He looks awesome. He has a cool vibe, but I don't ever know what he's talking about or what his goals are. And he fell like right back into that, cutting these long-winded, awesomely performed promos where I'm like, oh, I zoned out. And I watched it twice, and both times I zoned out, long-winded. Right. And like, whereas The Fiend, I feel like, is very deliberate. I understand The Fiend more. You kind of get more of a scope of what he does, and there's theories behind it that you can kind of follow about what happens to wrestlers when you wrestle him and you beat him and how far he'll push you. And Bray just doesn't have that. Bray, if you remember, was just kind of a jobber, really, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, loved Bray. I would say Bray is one of the reasons I really got back into wrestling. I was like, this guy looks fucking cool. I saw him on a rocking chair with a lantern, and I was like, that's an interesting cat. That reminds me of like why I like wrestling, you know?
Right.
And
totally.
Still, he's deeply one of my guys. He's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. Okay, but that being said, I just felt like it was kind of felt like a bunch of scenes, but didn't really effectively edit in a way where it was like, oh, it's kind of all dream sequence, you know?
Yeah, I said in a text to you that it was like a bunch of cool scenes with like interesting transitions, like, okay, Braun just blacks out and he wakes up here, but there was no kind of continuity or like through line from scene to scene.
Right. And like, I didn't know what the rules of this thing were at all. And I didn't know if it's just, it's like, oh, come meet me here at the Swamp. It was like Braun had been there before, but I also didn't feel like he had been there before. It was like, welcome home. But also there was nothing to it, really. There was no like landscape where you're like, it just felt like, oh, they're in this corner. Now they're in that corner. You know,
then
you know
they
what
were
I mean?
Like in the garage where he delivered his like long soliloquy. They were in the garage. I have to say, while he was doing that, you said you zoned out. I actually think I don't remember what he said because I was so concerned with, there was a light bulb dangling in front of him. And it was like almost touching his skin.
It's
and
like an Edison bulb.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, he's going to get burned. And I was like very distracted by that.
Right. Yeah, no. But it's like, so then like, you know, like it was like, it was just like a bunch of tropes from movies. It's like, all right, Braun has that moment where he sees himself and himself knocks himself out, like the Star Wars, like it's Vader. You knock his helmet, then you see your face underneath. Then he's in the chair tied up. Then he's fighting some guy with a shovel who then goes on fire. And you're like, who's this guy? Does Braun have?
I do not know.
Are they part of the Wyatt family? Like, who, these guys work for him? Like, who are these guys he's fighting? I don't know. I don't understand this swamp. Like, for example, if you there's the Matt Hardy stuff is more like carefully done. Like, you know, it's the Hardy compound.
Right.
You know the character is there, and you even know when it's final deletion. There's a match, and there's a ref, and it's a, right. So there's more clarity. Now that being said, I don't think it needs all that. Because I love the precedent. My favorite thing about this match is that, like, it's a great way to get Bray away from the title. Like, Bray does not need to – he can wrestle guys who have the title like he did here. But that's not what it's all about for this character. This character makes it personal. You go to him, and when you wrestle him, you have some kind of – you go to his territory. You try to, like, settle your situation with him. It's not about championships. It's above that. It might change you as a person.
Yeah, he's like collecting people or souls or whatever to put their photos on the wall in the Firefly Funhouse and like add another one kind of like his collection there.
But then it was like kind of random. It was like, oh, here's this laughing little girl thing. It was just like, oh, that's from a horror film. Let's put that in. Like, the editor was just like, I'll add this. I'll add this. Looks great. But it didn't feel like a real deliberate story. Now, like, Alexa Bliss moment, I thought was the strongest moment in it. And I was like, oh, then that's when you're like, oh, it's Sister Abigail. And it's like, oh, he always wanted to be with Alexa. And that's how he's getting in your mind.
I at first was like, oh, is this Sister Abigail? But then it just seemed like it was a vision of Alexa Bliss in like
I think so.
Lace hood. I don't know.
Right.
But it was a callback to their like years ago when they were mixed tag team partners. So,
but that's a cool moment to haunt Bray with, right? Be like, oh, here's like, this never worked for you. Like, you were in love with this woman and I know it. You never really said it, but I know it. But that's the only moment that was an actual specific haunting of that character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'll save that for later. That'll be too much of a derail. But then it was like another moment that was like to haunt him was that boat moment. They treated the same way. But the boat moment was stupid.
Yeah. So Bray, he's in the boat.
Describe this moment.
So Bray winds up on his back in a little motorboat in the swamp, and somehow the motorboat powers on and rides off into the dark swamp. And then Braun's like, yeah, cool. And then pretty soon after, the boat just kind of like turns around and comes back, but it's empty.
And he's like shocked. Like, I can't believe it's coming back.
I can't believe it.
But it already drove on its own.
Right.
And then he looks in it. It's like, it's empty. It's like, he got out of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, where did he go? And then he attacks him from the back. You're like, you know, it's so lowbrow, a moment like that. Coming off that Abigail moment, that was cool, you know, where you're like, actually, oh, like Strowman, like, why not? You know, what else has Strowman done that he's not proud of, you know?
Yeah, they could have turned the boat around and had like something in it or someone in it.
Yeah, what about his failed cash in? Why don't they talk about that? Like, haunt him with the fact that like you failed to cash it.
Like an old briefcase.
Right. You know, like dive into the lore of the thing. So I just felt like, you know, anyway. And then the ending, I thought it was cool to like flash the sign like, oh, it's over. He won.
But I love that.
I thought that was cool, but I didn't follow it. I was kind of like, oh, it's over. Oh, okay. But because I didn't know how it ends, I was kind of like, oh, there's no pinfalls in this? Like, I didn't know the rules, so it was like, I had too many questions. You know, like,
well, you saw the Fiend pop up at the end, right?
Yeah, that, so then I'm saying, then when the Fiend popped up, that's cool. It's like, but also, what does that mean? That means that the Fiend is, well, what does that even really mean? It's just, he looked awesome. It's cool to see the Fiend pop out of water.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
I don't know, but I just kind of feel like, well, if the Fiend is involved, like the Fiend popping up at the end, it's like, oh, the Fiend was behind this whole spirit journey that he led Braun Strowman on through the swamp. It doesn't justify everything that happened before, but I am willing to be like, oh, okay. Like,
right. And that's why I'm saying I liked it, because I understand that I'm overthinking it.
Yeah.
But I just think it was like, there was a way to make this way cooler, and like, 100%. They didn't do it. Like, where like the Boneyard match was very successful. I thought that was really fun. And the Firefly Funhouse match was also cool, because that was the build as the Fiend. So it was like full on psychological. That's like going into a maze of the mind maze of his opponent. But this one didn't really have that, because it was like trying to be Fedora Bray. And the problem is Fedora Bray never made a lick of sense. And they never tried. They would get, I mean, go back, listen to this podcast during his whole, it was so frustrating that the Fedora Bray was such a frustrating character. He would, everything was awesome, but he never made any fucking sense. He would just go on and on. And you're like, I can't figure out what this character's motives are. I don't know what, you know, I don't know. And then he just loses. And you're like, all right.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, that being said, it was really fun. Mm-hmm. I thought the best match on the card was Dolph Ziggler versus Drew McIntyre. I thought that match was really great. Ziggler add the stipulation that Drew, that only Ziggler can use Extreme Rules, which
great
I thought was
stipulation
pretty
cool. for Ziggler.
Yeah, great, because he's so much smaller, you know?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then there were some really cool moments. Drew had a moment where he picked him up for a suplex to put him through a table and then remembered, oh, I'm not allowed to use the tables or I'll lose the title. So then he had to turn around and then he dropped Ziggler like right on the mat.
Yeah. There.
But then he sold that like, oh, that was more stress on his shoulder than he wanted to do because he had to turn him around. You're mm-hmm. like, the stipulation was really a horror show. Yeah, it was really haunting.
It was
Drew.
Horrifying. Well, and you could see like Drew doing the math, like,
right.
I can't. Oh wait, it's my instinct to do this, but right. I am not allowed to because the title's on the line, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, the story of that match was great, and because you saw it on Drew's face, it worked really well, especially in this setting of not a big audience. So it's more. You see them and hear them a lot more. So mm-hmm. that storytelling really worked. Ziggler had a couple moments. Ziggler jumped into that plexiglass like
oh,
maybe at 100 miles.
Oh, my God. I know. And the sound is so amplified yeah. that it sounds like crazy. Like,
I know. He sold the fuck out of that plexiglass. And then the 9-count spot actually got me nervous where, like, the count out, I was like, Drew was so close to getting counted out. They cut that very close.
Yeah.
And the finish was great. That Claymore was the most out of nowhere Claymore I've seen.
Hashtag out of nowhere.
Right. Because Ziggler was going for a super kick and Drew did a kip up into a Claymore. Very
love
dumb.
A kip up. Love a kip up.
By the way, just for people speaking of out of nowhere, we're gonna have a special bonus episode of this pod coming up that Aaron doesn't even know about. That is in the works today. But that's all I'm gonna say for now.
Oh.
I think I'll probably put it on. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe it'll be a Patreon exclusive or the bonus feed. But I have one of the most cow.
I think I know where this is yeah. going, and I'm
yeah,
very excited,
right.
and
you're
I'm
probably
delighted.
Right. You're
yeah.
probably right. All right. Was Apollo Crews really not medically cleared?
That's a really good question. Everything
confused.
I read said that he was not cleared, but I don't know why. I think I read somewhere, this is like sheet dirt, but like I read
sheet
that
dirt.
It's sheet dirt, but that he may have had like a back injury or a shoulder injury or something like that.
Yeah.
But the word from the powers that be is that he wasn't medically cleared.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that also confused me. The Sasha Bailey match at Extreme Rule. Oh, no, Sasha, the Bailey match, whatever, against Nikki, yeah. that, you know, whatever. But Sasha wins the title against Asuka. So, okay, a couple things about this match. I enjoyed the match, but boy, oh boy, I mean, Sasha is, sometimes she's hard to watch in the ring. I mean, they had a spot, I don't know. There's not that many wrestlers where I really get like nervous to watch wrestle.
Yes.
She makes me so nervous. I can't imagine what it's like to be her husband and watch her wrestle. You know?
It's got to be horrifying. She looks great though in her gear that he makes. But
yeah, I mean,
yeah.
You see what she looked like on Monday? She had the dopest outfit on. She looked like the unprecedented 1.1 million bucks.
Really? Oh my gosh, that's huge. I have
she
to look.
Wore,
I
look it up. It's like a onesie. Like
I love that.
Like glitter onesie. You got to mm-hmm. see it. I'm not going to describe it right.
Yeah.
It's like something like oh, Selena yeah. would wear, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's awesome.
Did you see it?
Yeah, it's like a striped halter neck cat suit with maybe rhinestones and mesh. Very cool.
I think it's see-through.
Yeah, the stripes are like see-through.
She just looked awesome, like with the music
yeah,
playing.
She looks great.
But
yeah, she's very reckless in the ring, and yeah. it's one thing that I kind of like about her because it is Sorry, there's a noise in my house. It is exciting to watch her, but it does make you nervous, especially because she has a track history of being a dangerous performer.
That's the thing. It's like, but to be fair, I'll say like, I would, she reminds me sometimes of Daniel Bryan, which is kind of a ridiculous comparison because Daniel Bryan is so technically sound, you know?
Totally.
But sometimes if people remember, not the current Daniel Bryan, but he used to do, before all his injuries and stuff, he used to just flip to the outside pretty recklessly and stuff. He like, and that comes from the same place as Sasha. She's wrestling, she's small, you know?
Yeah.
And she wrestles, a lot of these women are actually kind of like, more, they're bigger than her, anyway,
in person,
like,
she's tiny,
right?
She's like a little person.
So the, but like that spot where her and Oscar were on the top rope, they were doing like kind of a, what would you say, that was like a, it was like a German suplex from the top rope, right? But they set up for that spot for a long time. Like they were, like the setup was way. I mean, sometimes it's fucking shocking. I remember like Ziggler and Rollins did one of those reverse Falcon like a dragon suplex Falcon arrow off the top rope, which I asked him about every time he comes on the podcast. I ask him about that spot.
Yeah,
and he goes, "Which spot?" And I'm like, "You don't remember that? That wasn't like the highlight of your life that moment.
Right?
It was at SummerSlam." But like they go into those moves like fast. Like, yeah, you know,
totally.
This one they set up for a while, and that also made me nervous. Then they did it, and basically the rotation of it is Sasha has to do a backflip. She landed on her knee.
Right, and that.
And it looked bad. And then she was selling it, she rolled down the knee pad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, my God, she fucking killed herself. But then she was fine.
Yeah, she was fine.
So I was like, "Oh my God, I got worked!" And I don't know. It was kind of crazy. She sold it. I props to her, because whenever you get sold injury, but she then went up the turnbuckle and then fell. Like she
right. That's why I wasn't quite clear on what happened like if she did get hurt and was like, or maybe got kind of hurt. I had no idea.
I think she maybe got kind of hurt. Is what
tweaked
I would think.
It. Tweaked yeah. It.
But clearly they messed up some kind of finish in this match.
Well, yeah. So what I called a major wig malfunction, an MWM took place at the very end.
Oh, we had an MWM. I actually didn't catch that somehow.
I rewound it because I was like, what happened here? Because I wanted to see it. And it looked like it was just like the wig may not have been fastened correctly or enough, because I think it just like slid back off her head, and she actually covered it up really well because she was laying face down and then she was facing away from the camera a lot of the time. But when you saw her, she was holding the top of the wig like this. And then after the end of the match, when she was sitting outside of the ring, she was like trying to tug it back on. But it was, I think the wig malfunction was not, it seems silly, but I think if your wig malfunctions in the middle of a match like that and you're Sasha Banks, like, it's actually a problem. It's an MWM.
I know. I mean, you know, it's tough for the women in general because they wear the extensions and they come out a lot, and you know it's a lot of hair, you know.
Yeah, and I couldn't tell, like, I don't know, forgive me, I don't know how they get their wigs attached, because that fucker is on there. But so I don't know if it hurt or what, but to get your wig ripped out like that.
I imagine there's moments where it hurts.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, oh my God, hold on. My dogs are going nuts, everybody. Hold on, let me let them in the room so they'll calm down, all right?
All right, so the dogs are entering Bengal Tiger Studios.
The dogs are entering Bangor, here, you know what? You guys listen to Aleister Black for 1 second.
Okay.
All All right, we're back. All right. Yeah, but anyway, so the thing was, Bailey putting the ref shirt on, you know, I felt like this was like the night of confusion. Like, you had the swamp fight. I was like, how did that end? I was like, right. Is Apollo Crews there? I don't know. Then, like, Rey Mysterio eye thing. I didn't see the eye. I was like, wait, what happened there? Like, then this was like, did she win? Like, if you had one of these, it'd be fine. Like, if it was like Sasha won the title and it was kind of weird, it was schmazzy, you'd be whatever. But the whole show was like a little sloppy in that way, where I was like, I'm kind of unclear what I'm. This show is just like a mess a little bit, you know?
The confusion show at Extreme Rules.
Right. Maybe that was the horror show? Was the finishes?
Yeah.
So let's jump over it. But anyway, Sasha with the title. Those women with the four titles is just a blast, you know? But I guess Sasha is not the champion.
I didn't watch Raw, so I don't know what was determined there. So
Stephanie came on the Titantron during Raw. And was
she
like,
was
hey,
live
hey.
From the Money in the Bank conference room at
Money
Titan
in the Bank
Towers.
Conference room in Titan Towers, yeah. Yep. No, that's the Money in the Bank conference room. All of a sudden, Stephanie, I guess you're the McMahons. I get that they're always in charge, but this show has no clear GM. All of a sudden, she's like, actually, next week, and, you know, the show is just – It's sloppy. I know she's Stephanie McMahon, but it is sloppy for Stephanie to just like, I show up whenever, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. that's it. And then no one's in charge of the show. It's sloppy. Like, you know, like you have Regal, you know, Triple H, you know, they're there doing it. So it's just, it's confusing. It's like, oh, well now they're going to have another title shot, whatever, but okay. Whatever. Yeah, this eye for an eye match. Look, I thought the match was fun. Rollins, I thought, just to jump to Raw for a second, I thought cut a great promo on Raw, which we'll get into. But I didn't see the eyeball. I saw a pic of it online. But did you see it on the feed?
I was watching really closely for it because I was like, are they going to show it? Are they going to show it? Like, let's see these horrors. And through his hand, kind of, you could see like a white fake eye. It didn't look real at all. It was like matte. Like it didn't look like your eyeball would look. Right. And so I did see it. The thing that was most horrifying to me was Seth Rollins throwing up like that. Right. That I reacted to very negatively. Did not like it.
Right. Well,
I
like that Seth Rollins is throwing up because he's like so disgusted what he do with himself. I kind of love where they're going with. I think Seth Rollins and Randy Orton are doing like cool jobs during this quarantine. Like, the Seth Rollins is like, his character is like going down this wormhole, and what he did that was at this promo, during this promo, I thought was fucking killer was. Is he reminded us why he became a villain, which mm-hmm. I thought was really cool. He's like, the question I keep getting is, do you regret doing what you did to Ray? And he's like, my question to the WWE Universe is, do you guys regret what you did to me? You made me this way, right? And it reminded us, remember why he turned heel. Like, he was the face of the company with the title, and then with the Fiend thing, everybody started booing him, and Seth Rollins mm-hmm. is not cool and all that shit, and he's like, you turned me into this, you know? And so it's cool that like we know actually he's a good guy, but the fans drove him fucking nuts. That's the arc of this new Seth Rollins, which is very cool, you know?
And it makes a lot of sense.
Yes. I really like the work he's doing. Seth Rollins is so good at this biz. And he's I think the guy doing the best, him and Orton, but I think that Rollins is the guy doing the best work during the quarantine that's not going to get the credit he deserves.
Right.
Because with the crowd, it would be way better.
Yeah, I mean, he does thrive, though, without the crowd around. And I think he's, like, working on his acting skills a little bit more, and there's some more subtlety when he speaks. Whereas, like, I think
I should have known better, dude.
Yeah, it gets lost in the crowd.
Right.
Good for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we know he's been studying Christian Bale specifically.
Yeah. He must watch that. good for him.
Yeah, honestly, good for him. If I'd say anything, I would say, really, you know what? Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him.
Agree.
Got it.
For you.
Worth it.
Sammy Guevara.
He's back.
His name? When he had the mask on.
What did they say? I don't know.
I forget.
I actually turned
Serpentino.
Down. I turned down to give Karrion Kross and Dijakovic the full. I gave them the full screen because it was like this was. I'm trying to figure this Karrion Kross guy out. You know,
noble of you. Yeah.
I'm trying to figure this out because I'm not feeling it at all.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of listeners are like, he's cool. He's awesome. He's awesome. So I'm like, I want to make sure I give it my full thing. Anyway, whatever, while we're talking about it, but I'll get into it more on the bonus set. But I liked the match. Him, Dijakovic, had a good match. I liked it. I just don't – I'm unclear with this Karrion Kross guy. I'm unclear. I'm not clicking into whatever the Fallen Prey thing is.
Me neither. I don't watch NXT very much.
Right. So you're like, well, I'm saying it's just, they just say Fallen Prey and it's like TikTok, your time is up. But it's like, whereas I don't have a handle on it yet and I don't think they do either. So anyway, it's a little like satanic or something, or like Fallen Prey. We're going to take this place down. But I'm not. I want to get a handle on it. I'm also unclear of his wrestling style. Totally, he's not. He's billed like he's fucking monster.
Right.
But he's not Batista sized. And so,
if you're not Batista sized, there's no room in this room for you.
Well, I'm saying so. It's like Aleister Black. He's like a kickboxer,
right?
And then he's supposed to be threatening Keith Lee, but he's a lot smaller than Keith Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't. And it seems like he's doing a lot of. He doesn't have. I don't know what his disciplines are. It seems to be doing a lot of slams. You know.
Ooh, slam heavy.
I just don't have a handle on it yet. I'm not saying I don't like him. I don't have a handle
on
it yet.
So you turned down AEW.
Right now it's
Soyft. Yeah, it's Soyft.
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 Soyft. Well, Soyft.
Yeah.
You turned down AEW in favor of NXT so you could dive deeper into Cross.
Yes, because we have listeners who don't like my perceived AEW bias.
Well, we know you have a bias. I mean,
but let's talk about AEW. Well, no, but go back 6 months ago before AEW started, I was like, I don't know how they're going to compete with NXT at all. And then AEW this week, that first hour of AEW was a fucking blast.
It was off the chains. Like a lot happened.
Yes. It was like, wow. I was like, what are they going to do in the next hour? I mean, I cannot believe it.
And I don't double rig. I go back and forth. And I clicked over to NXT on a break to see what was happening. And it was like a musician in the studio talking about like making music and how like the beat of the song is like the beats in wrestling. I just turned it off.
Oh, good for you.
Right.
You know, like there was some really good spots. There was a match with that that dude Bronson, Action Bronson.
I would watch that.
Roddy Strong and Gargano, and there was some killer spots in there. I love that Roddy Strong does the full on Olympic slam. So if Kurt Angle's gone, someone needs to do it. I love Roddy Strong's wrestling style. I always pop for Gargano's. He does like that spear through the middle of the ropes, kind of like a dart thing.
Right.
I love that. There's tons of shit that they do. That it was a great time. I was enjoying the NXT show. The AEW was just like Butcher and the Blade and versus the Bucks. That match was insane. I mean, like,
that was crazy.
I don't know NXT. Like, you know, look, it's like, I guess you could argue if you're a true wrestling purist, you could be like, well, that stuff's a little too spot festy for me. I like more, you're more traditional wrestling talent. You can like that. But just from the eyes of just if you put just entertainment eyeballs, right?
Yeah, I watch with entertainment eyeballs.
Right, like my dad's eyes, right?
Yeah.
Both shows up.
Look through Richie's eyes.
well, what's the point of these guys pointing at NXT when right. you have these guys are fucking crazy? Like, these people are fucking nuts. And that's what it is. Like, AEW, I mean, the wrestling is like, these people are going to die.
Like, the first match ended with Cody in a pile of tacks. This was like 8:20 on a Wednesday.
I know, and they weren't even rigged tacks either. Like, the tacks, you saw his back. It was like they were stuck in his back. And, like, also when you're watching, like, Cody's not going to the tacks. You know what I mean? It's going to be Kingston. And that's why they brought Eddie Kingston in. He's going to go through his tacks. And then you're like, no, he just went right on the tacks.
Oh, I know. It was just
like, Cody's crazy. Like, out there, like, every, they make every Wednesday, like, feel like a fucking big deal.
Totally. And I think it's smart that he's, like, kicking off every show with this challenge, because you never, like Forrest Gump said, you never know what you're going to get.
He said that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand. I'm interested. Like, if you, I understand that perspective and I respect the perspective. If you're someone who's like, that wrestling is like, it's, if you see it and you're like, it's too crazy for me, it's too spot festy, it's, I like to see, like, more two guys grappling. You want to see more of that, like, Orny Adams. Like, they had that match. Orny Lorcan. Not Orny Adams. That's a comedian. Orny Lorcan versus Timothy Thatcher, right? I mean, those two guys, by the way, I mean, they looked like default wrestler A and default wrestler B. Like,
right.
They're both in blue trunks. They looked exactly like, it looked like one version of him where he doesn't shave his head and one version where he doesn't. It was like pre-quar, post-quar.
Right.
But, like, no, that being said, those guys are killer wrestlers. I mean, Thatcher, I'm actually a mark for Thatcher. I think he looks awesome with his teeth look like shit. I mean, he's scary looking dude. He feels like a perfect dude to have, like, be like a submission guy. Great.
Yeah.
But if my dad saw that match and then he saw the Butcher and the Blade, where the Blade flipped to the out of the ring, missed the table, I don't know how he's even walking.
Oh my God. You know? All I could think about was, like, his tailbone. Like, he landed, like, square on his ass.
Right. And then the match ends with the Bucks both jumping off of each tunnel.
Oh my God.
And you're like, I don't know. You know? And so then I was like, oh wow, that match was insane. Then they cut immediately. Jake the Snake, and you're like, oh my God, and he's with Lance Archer, is huge, and he just goes, come here, and then he goes into the locker room, and he just beats up every stooge in the locker room, throws one guy through the ceiling.
like tile came out and fell and broke. My favorite part was he like knocked one guy down and then, like, picked him up by the back of his jeans and was, like, carrying him, right, like a true bully move.
And
threw him in the trash.
Right. That's it. Now, look, I just think when it comes, so I just don't understand how a wrestling fan, AEW feels like, I always say, it just feels like the wrestling show that, like, we've always kind of wanted. I feel like it's like, it's, you know, it's more for adults. It's run by a fucking mark and a half who just learned everything, right? Like Tony Khan, he's a billionaire mark. 35-year-old guy, watched what Vince did, took all the best stuff from it, and was like, oh, I'm going to build on this and bring a new perspective. And we have both. We still have WB. We're the winners. We're winning. We still get to watch Edge Orton, you know?
Yes.
We get to watch Royal Rumbles and Brock. We get to see all that, but then we also get to see a fucking Canadian destroyer off of a dinosaur.
Right. Right.
It's just, it's a great, it's, that's what's crazy is that wrestling right now feels frustrating with this quarantine shit.
That's the problem.
But also amazing at the same time, where I'm shocked that wrestling fans are dipping out. And I'm also shocked. I think AEW should have higher ratings every week.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it is easy to dip out on the WWE product. Like, I don't watch SmackDown with the volume on most of the time, and I watch a lot of Raw on mute. But
that's all quantity.
That's quarantine. Yeah, it's quantity and it's quarantine.
The Qs.
It's the two Qs.
The Q and I's.
Yeah. Ooh.
if when I used to watch when I used to watch, and during the Attitude Era, as a young lad. Okay.
Oh yeah, you were just
You saw what I looked like. Remember what were we watching?
We watched Beyond the Mat, and like Dan's like analog was in the movie.
There was basically me. It looked just like, and I was like, I can't believe that's probably what I exactly looked like.
And my thought watching it was, I bet this is like Dan. Like this has had to be what
me then and now, except for that I was a virgin then, and I am still now.
But, you had facial hair. You were full grown.
Yeah. sadly for me, I'm the same guy then and now.
Yeah. But,
like, I feel the same way about Monday Night Raw then that I do now, except for the fact that the quantity is so hard to keep up with. But if I'm saying for you, if Raw was then Raw was a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
They added SmackDown then. And so it was like fine, but that was at the height of wrestling.
Right.
But you didn't have NXT, you know, you had WCW was dying, you know, but even then it was like Raw's the thing to watch. You can kind of miss SmackDown.
Right.
If Raw was just, if you just had two, and it was 2 hours, by the way, you know,
that would be key.
So if Raw was once a week and you didn't have SmackDown, just Raw, you would never miss a Raw.
No, Of course not.
They overwhelm.
It's just like AEW. It's 2 hours. It's easy to watch, and then that's it for the week. You can watch AEW Dark if you want, but like that's just what it is. I totally agree with that.
For the hardcore marks, I'll relate this to Magic the Gathering because some people like this.
I like it. And I know nothing about Magic.
Well, like they decided to make these things called Expedition Lands, right? And they're like, these are extremely rare promo products. And they're in like, so a rare, like if you wanted to get a mythic rare card, that's one out of every 8-pack. These are one out of every 45 packs, something like that.
That's
right?
Very rare.
And they're like full art. They look awesome. You know, they have high value. They're going to stay. So when those came out, I was like, I'm chasing all of these. And I put a lot of effort into getting them.
Uh-huh.
Trading, opening packs, I would get one. I'm like, all right, I have this one, you know, right. And then they announced, oh, there's going to be these kind of promos in every set that comes out. And then you're like, all right, I can't do that again. I can't do that. I was like, I love, and I still look at them and go like, oh, those are so cool. I wish I could chase those, but I just can't. And when something becomes overwhelming, you just don't do it. It's like when you look at your to-do list and you're like, oh, individually, these are all not that hard to do. But as a list, I'm going to do none of this.
Yeah, it takes the wind out of your sails. I would equate that to like when McDonald's had teeny beanies, the little beanie babies in their Happy Meals.
Yes, yes, yes.
I was like, I really wanted to have the full set of teeny beanies. But for my parents, it got to a point where I was like, bitch, we're not taking you to McDonald's that much. So I never got
the Diana teeny beanie.
Well, I had like the platypus and the flamingo and stuff, but there might have been like one that I missed. And it was just like, it had diminishing returns. Like how many of these can I get? Fuck it.
Yeah. And then you just get, you eventually just give up. But so, all right. Moving, getting back into the realm of wrestling and not our 90s hobbies that for me have extended into the today.
You should see my Beanie Baby collection. It's sick.
You should see my Beanie Babies. But so anyway, two places I want to go. So it's looking like Kairi Sane is leaving and they're trying to get her to stay. And they let her pin Bayley on Raw. And I read that was her last match, though. But I don't know if it is or not. But we'll see what happens with Kairi Sane. But it's like, you know, it's that classic thing. It's like she's threatening to leave, so now they're giving her some good booking, you know?
Of course.
Right.
That's such a loss, too, because she's really great.
Yeah. We had the return of Mustafa Ali. Which is cool.
Looking
Did they
good.
Just ditch the whole hacker angle?
Oh my God, I don't know. Was the hacker angle attributed officially to Ali?
Sammy Guevara.
It was Sammy Guevara.
Yeah, that's what we just. No, I don't. It felt like it was him or
I
whatever.
Thought it was him too, but then it disappeared. I saw like maybe a.
I don't know. They probably just realized like, what are we gonna do with a hacker? Like, what do you even do with that? You know.
And they just abandoned ship.
I mean, yeah. I'm down to try anything, but like, what are they can't, you know, I don't know what they exactly do with that. And then another thing that was shady this week, Aleister Black shadily ended his undefeated streak.
Right.
Which was pretty smart because like you can't, the undefeated streak thing is a trap. But they made him look strong. They booked him strong and people didn't even know that, Rollins had, beat him this week. Yeah, so I don't know, save some of this stuff for the bonus episodes. All right, last thing I want to talk about is there's a hashtag going on, the Naomi Deserves Better hashtag.
Oh, yeah, I've seen this.
And this got a lot of heat. This was just getting a lot of traction that, like, she's not booked right. And then Booker T came out and said that you don't – He came in with kind of what do you think he came back came with. Like the classic, that generation, this is how wrestling works. No one gets anything. You earn everything. No, you don't want to give her a handout and blah, 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 and this and
right.
that. And it just, you know, it's just an interesting thing because I love to also believe that. Like I love to think you earn stuff, right?
I
love to think in wrestling you grab that brass ring.
It's not like a participation trophy culture.
Right, but let's talk about the reality, which is fucking tough for these guys, the Booker T guys. They really
– Yeah.
Now, I'll say this in full disclosure. I don't think Naomi has had anything close to, like, a Becky Blood moment, right?
No.
Or, like, anything close to – although she did have a heel run that I didn't hate back in the day. But I know she said that it kind of made her uncomfortable because it like wasn't her vibe.
I mean, the Becky reality. Blood moment is like lightning, and it's like
it's lightning in a bottle. I just said anything close to it, you know.
No,
using
not
that as an example is like because that's on par with Austin 316. Like that's
right,
like
right.
Those moments you live for, and they're hard to write. That's like pipe bomb level moment, you know. Like
that.
If you're like doing 10 lightning in a bottle wrestling moments, the reason we watch wrestling, the Becky moment is on that top 10 list probably. You know what I mean?
100%.
That's
like
barbershop window. I think over time that goes up there. But like I've watched Naomi for a long time and she hasn't had a match I really remember. She hasn't had a promo that has came to mind. So in that sense, I just want to, full disclosure of that. Now, I think she's talented. She's super athletic, arguably the most athletic woman in the women's division. Mm-hmm. The glow gimmick is cool. Like, I love the glow belt.
I loved the glow belt. That's one I would love a replica of, personally.
Right. Okay, but... And one of Booker T's claims against Naomi was he had said that he was like, she's super athletic, but like, he's like, I'd love to work with her for a little bit. I'd start giving her better matches. So I think he was calling into question her in-ring work, which I don't pretend to be an expert on knowing, like, is Naomi not trained right or blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right, right.
I don't know. I don't know exactly. But let's just talk about booking in general. We know that in WWE you get a script. That's, like, proven, right?
Right, yeah.
And the more wrestlers that leave, like I read an article that was talking about Eric Young was on Sirius and he was talking about leaving. He's like, WWE makes it all the same. And he was like, when I was working with Triple H and NXT, when we were doing the whole Sanity thing, mm-hmm. he was like, I had some creative control over that. And he basically pointed his finger at Vince. The biggest example pointing their finger at Vince is Dean Ambrose. And I can't help but think about Dean Ambrose because – if you go back, Dean Ambrose was on Stone Cold's podcast when he was the champion.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe he wasn't the champion yet. And Stone Cold embarrassed Dean.
He did.
He straight up was like, "You don't. Why don't you grab the brass ring? Like, you're not doing anything."
Yeah,
you
he know? Like took him to task over
that shitty this, Mania match.
Yeah, exactly.
With Lesnar.
Right. And because Dean Ambrose was defensive about, he kind of like deflected everything onto Brock.
Right. So I was very vocal on this podcast, kind of like talking about grabbing the brass ring. Stone Cold always talks about Cesaro. He's like, Cesaro, you know, what he asked Vince, he was like, why are you, what he actually asked him, he was like, why don't you push Cesaro? Look what this guy can do. And he's like, he's missing, Vince straight up was like, he's missing something, you know?
Right. The okay. X factor.
Right. He's yeah. like, Cesaro, he's just said it honestly, which I thought was one of the more honest moments we've seen from Vince. But yeah, so you think about Ambrose, and he said this stuff, and for years it was like, hey, that was the perception, is that Ambrose was not clicking in WWE because he wasn't grabbing the brass ring. Then he leaves, talks a bunch of shit, goes to AEW, and in my opinion, is doing fucking great work when he has this creative freedom, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And because he's having way better probably, matches.
And he probably wants to perform better because he stands behind the product. You know what I mean? It's not right. like he's given the script, he's doing it begrudgingly, blah, blah, blah.
Right. So if I'm saying like what they do in court cases, right? You look for precedent, right? That's what, you know, yes. the Supreme Court justices, they're looking through old cases and looking for precedents and examples. So if I'm looking for the precedent, the Naomi precedent, I go to Dean Ambrose versus Vincent Kennedy McMahon and the WWE yes. trial. And I look at the outcome of that and I say, this issue is true. Like, it is true.
Absolutely.
And if you're Booker T and you're saying you have to grab the brass ring and you're Stone Cold saying grab the brass ring, you are I agree that there's some extent where you have your moments, you have your get these hands moments, you have your Suplex City moments. But under the parameters of WWE, to blame it fully on talent nowadays, you know you're being a jerk. You're wrong.
It's 100% wrong. And, you know, the argument always comes up like, well, Vince just controls everything. Like, Naomi doesn't. She can't just decide, like, she's not the person who's in power in the situation. Like, I agree that she does deserve better, but it's Vince's call, and that's the root of the problem.
Right. I think, like, that's if you think about SNL,
yeah,
is similar to WWE in that way. Right. And that's a world that I'm very familiar with. And so, like, in SNL, you pitch every – there's no ideas that don't come from the talent, right? So everybody comes to the table and they're at a table read and you read it and then you bring – oh, I'm going to try this character. Now, it might not make the show and then you might – none of your stuff made the show and then you get cast in a bunch of other stuff and you have smaller parts you don't want. But you got to try to bring your thing to the table. There's some level of democracy. Now, it's historically and written about a place that has a bunch of politics and cliques and blah, blah, blah. So it's hard to get your stuff through. So that makes it difficult. But WWE doesn't even come from a place of you pitch your ideas. Some right. guys can do it. Some don't. If you get listened to, it's completely random. It, yeah. The creative is very tightly controlled and it's given to you, right? You mm-hmm. are expected to perform like an artist, but treated like just an actor.
Yes.
So, right? So there, to say something like Booker T is saying is to be blind to the bureaucracy of the institution. And you're not looking at precedent, which is the Dean Ambrose versus Vincent Kennedy McMahon WWE case.
Legendary court case.
Right. And yeah. What about Cody Rhodes versus Vincent Kennedy McMahon? I mean, Cody was so underestimated by WWE. I mean, if you see what Cody's up to now and you think that he couldn't main event in WWE, that's silly. The guy has so much creativity in his bones.
Right. And it's just like Vince has all the power and he's the like governing body, but he is also often, I mean, he's sometimes just straight up wrong. Like,
right.
There's precedent for him being incorrect about stuff all the time, and who he gives chances to and opportunities to, like, he's not making the right call all the time.
Right. And there's so many other factors that I'm not even totally blaming him, but I'm saying I do blame this thing of, like, you got to earn everything.
Right.
I think that that's only half of it.
Yes.
And so if you're come down being like, and it's just how I feel about politics. It's why I do, like, the, you know, the plug to RGN, the Dan Black Attack podcast.
Radio,
I'm so
news.
Shocked everybody thinks they fucking know everything. Yeah. Especially complicated issues. People have hard, hard stances about stuff that is so, so involved. You know?
Right.
And that's what happened to like, this Nick Cannon thing where he's trying to, like, here's an opinion about something that is way above his understanding, you know?
Right.
So anyway, so I think Naomi deserve better. Every WWE talent deserves better.
That's fair. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And I think Naomi's great.
Naomi's great, and she's really likable. And I think people want to see more. Not only that, but she's, like, from what I saw, like, a pretty big part of Total Divas.
Right.
And so, like, people kind of, I think, feel like
Trinity.
I at least feel like, oh, I'm kind of familiar with her as, like, a person, and I really like her a lot and would like to see her on my TV on, like, you know, Monday or Friday more.
Yeah, I would like to see people – I would like to see wrestlers – I would like to see wrestlers execute their vision for their characters more.
Yeah,
That's
totally.
Like, all I really want. And it seems like Triple H, from what I'm reading – Triple H is better at this than Vince. Like, that's just what these wrestlers, they're all leaving now. So the mouths are moving, you know?
Yeah.
And it's pretty interesting. Anyway, I'm going to save the rest of the stuff we have here for the bonus episode this week. But I'll give you a little preview of some of these topics that I got, which is, should Brian Cage wear kick pads? did Britt Baker get actually break her nose? I looked a little closer at that. did she break her nose when that thing hit her, or did she break her nose when she was bleeding at that other match? I don't know. I'm interested in that. I want to talk a lot about how great this MJF match was on AEW, and what a great character building match he had moment there. It had nothing to do with titles. It was just about building a character and doing his thing in that TV time. And then we'll talk about this NXT title tournament, and we'll talk more about Karrion Kross. And I'd like to get – well, I'll get Tulo's take on Karrion Kross.
Tulo's take.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what. A big Scarlet Mark. When she enters and that whole thing, I'm totally – she's a star. Her acting is great when she's just smiling and laughing, and she's, like, kind of scary. I dig it.
All and right, they're a couple in real life, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
IRL. Yeah, Honda.
IRL.
Anyway, Aaron, I'll see you the next time.
At the Cow Movie Clubhouse.
I'll see you in the Cow Movie Club, and we'll
and
be
you,
talking
don't
about
forget,
Knockout.
We're going to be talking about Knockout, and after you listen to this episode, check out the Cow Movie Club sampler, My Spy episode.
What day should I put that out?
Put it out along with this episode.
All right, I'll put it out.
Yeah, can click over to the My Spy episode and see what we're up to in the Cow Movie Clubhouse. And if you like it, you can join us next week
to
watch Knockout at patreon.com/comediansofwrestling.
All right, everybody. Yeah, thank you. And everybody check out the Dan Black Attack podcast while you're at it. That one is free. I mean, we're doing a lot of potting. There's a lot of good content. And also, by the way, a lot of you reached out to me today about the Nick Cannon discussion, and you know, you were saying that you really dug it, so I appreciate you guys listening. And rate all of our podcasts 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, right? And everybody, hey, keep watching wrestling. Kisses.
Comedians of Wrestling. I listen up
Wednesday
when I go to work.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.